So we are in the Gospel of Mark on Sundays here at City Light. If you have a Bible, you can go ahead and turn there with me. If you don't, there should be one under your chair or the chair next to you. You can pick one of those up. If you don't own a Bible, take it with you. That's our gift to you. We're going to be on page 842 in those Bibles, Mark chapter 7. We're continuing our series in the Gospel of Mark that we began weeks ago. At City Light, if you're with us on a Sunday, this is generally what we do. We're going through a book of the Bible and looking at a particular passage of it every week because we believe God has actually spoken here and that the best way we can hear from him is going to the things that he has already said and considering them together. While you're turning there, I want to tell you the story of a guy named G.K. Chesterton. I quote him a lot. He's an author who wrote in the 1900s and he was British. And one time a British publication wrote to him and asked him to write a column for them. And their prompt for the column was, we want you to answer the question, what's wrong with the world? So Chesterton wrote back, and he said, dear sirs, I am sincerely yours, G.K. Chesterton. And that was the extent of his column. Well, Chesterton was a Christian, and he was expressing a Christian belief that the biggest problems in the world, though there are many problems that are kind of out there, the biggest problems in the world are in here, internal to us. Now, what's wrong with the world is a question that we all kind of have to grapple with at some point on some level. Because you live in a world that you know has problems, right? You go out into the world and you experience that the world's not the way it's supposed to be. So some part of you wonders, why is it this way? How did it get this way? Is it what it's supposed to be? And a typical kind of religious answer to that question is what's wrong with the world is the unclean, immoral people. It's the people out there. It's the fact that we've lost a sense of our morals. And if people were more adherent to a set of laws, a set of morality, if people listened to their elders and to the people in charge in their lives, if we had better authority structures, if we had tighter morality, then the world could be fixed. That would fix the problems in the world. And what we're going to see in this passage is that that position is basically put forward in another way. And when you come to church or when you come to the Bible, that may be what you expect to find. And indeed, it's going to be here. But the interesting thing is the people saying it are the people Jesus is going to have a problem with and the people that Jesus is going to be arguing against. He actually refutes this perspective of theirs, that the problem with the world is something external, an uncleanliness to us. But what he doesn't do is disagree that we need to be clean. Jesus also says that we need to be clean, but he locates the source of our uncleanliness in a different place. And therefore, he proposes a different solution. So you do need to be clean. But in order to really understand that, we have to see why you need to be clean. We have to see what won't make you clean. And then we're going to look at where real cleanliness comes from. So look with me at Mark chapter 7. I'm going to begin reading at the beginning of the chapter, and then I'm going to read up through verse 23. Mark chapter 7. Speaking about Jesus, it says, now when the Pharisees gathered to him with some of the scribes who had come from Jerusalem, they saw that some of his disciples ate with hands that were defiled, that is, unwashed. For the Pharisees and all the Jews do not eat unless they wash their hands properly, holding to the tradition of the elders. And when they come from the marketplace, they do not eat unless they wash. And there are many other traditions that they observe, such as the washing of cups and pots and copper vessels and dining couches. And the Pharisees and the scribes asked him, why do your disciples not walk according to the tradition of the elders, but eat with defiled hands? And he said to them, well did Isaiah prophesy of you hypocrites. As it is written, this people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. In vain do they worship me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men. You leave the commandment of God and hold to the tradition of men. And he said to them, you have a fine way of rejecting the commandment of God in order to establish your tradition. For Moses said, honor your father and your mother, and whoever reviles a father or mother must surely die. But you say, if a man tells his father or his mother, whatever you would have gained from me is korban, that is, given to God, then you no longer permit him to do anything for his father or mother, thus making void the word of God by your tradition that you have handed down. And many such things you do. And he called the people to him again and said to them, hear me, all of you, and understand. There is nothing outside a person that by going into him can defile him. But the things that come out of a person are what defile him. And when he had entered the house and left the people, his disciples asked him about the parable. And he said to them, then are you also without understanding? Do you not see that whatever goes into a person from outside cannot defile him, since it enters not his heart, but his stomach, and is expelled? Thus he declared all foods clean. And he said, what comes out of a person is what defiles him. For from within, out of the heart of man, come evil thoughts, sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, coveting, wickedness, deceit, sensuality, envy, slander, pride, foolishness. All these evil things come from within, and they defile a person. So as we get started here, we come into contact with the Pharisees again. This is a group that's shown up throughout the Gospel of Mark, and they are the religious, morally upright, good people, the moral authority of Jesus' time. And their basic belief, the basic belief of religion, is that God accepts the good people. God accepts the people who follow the rules, who obey the laws. And so the key to being loved and accepted is coming into conformity with those rules. They're also the people Jesus has his most frequent conflicts with, his most frequent disputes with. And here the dispute centers around a washing tradition that they had. See, the Pharisees were students of the Bible, okay? They knew their Bible very well. And they knew that in earlier parts of the Bible, God did specify that there were certain ways to eat that were unclean and certain ways to eat that were clean. I was just reading in my personal Bible reading time, Leviticus chapter 11, which if you really want to blow your hair back, read Leviticus sometime. And detailed laws about what animals were clean and what animals were unclean. Basically meaning, what's an acceptable way to eat that is honoring to God, that glorifies him? So they looked at that, and they said, okay, there's rules here about what kind of eating is clean or unclean. And religious people love rules. They love them so much that just having the ones that God gave is never enough. And so they want to add on to those rules. And so what they've done is they've said, okay, sure, God declared some animals clean, some animals unclean, but we want to be really clean, okay? We want to be the really good people. So we're going to put in some kind of ritual for how you have to wash your hands before you eat that God never actually commanded, but that we're going to require everyone who's part of our community to observe. And so they see the disciples not eating that way, and they say, whoa, whoa, whoa. The tradition of the elders, the tradition of the people, is that you have to wash your hands a certain way before you eat in order for your eating to be acceptable to God. Religious people love that because if what it takes for me to think of myself as a good person, if what it takes for me to feel loved and accepted is to be able to look at a set of rules and say I'm measuring up, then more rules means more stuff I can reassure myself with. So not only do I know I'm good because I eat the clean animals, but I even wash my hands extra nice. I follow these rituals, and therefore I can, when I'm making my list of the reasons I know I'm a good person, I can add like three more things to it. The other attractive thing about it is that it keeps obedience to God external, which means it's much more doable. Like, it's pretty doable to just wash your hands before a meal. It doesn't take a whole lot of repentance. It doesn't take a whole lot happening in your relationship with God for you to just go ahead and say, I'm going to wash my hands before a meal. And so religion always wants to take God's commandments and lower the bar to some extent to something we can actually do. Because then, hey, I just got to go out and accomplish it. I can look at myself in the mirror and say, I've done my duty. I know I'm a good person, and therefore God loves and accepts me. And the easiest way to do that is to just make everything external. Make everything a matter of washing your hands. Make everything a matter of your skin being clean. And then you got your to-do list for the day. You go accomplish it. Pat yourself on the back because you're a good person. So this is what the religious leaders wanted to do. But Jesus responds to them in verses 6 and 7, exposing what's really happening here. What's really happening here is their hearts are far from God. See, religion and the adding of rules looks like the serious people. Like, you meet people like that and you think, oh, they're really serious about God. They're the people who really love him. Jesus turns it right back around on them and says, actually, your religion is evidence that your heart is far from God, that you don't love him. Here's how I know. You're teaching as God's commandments, traditions that you made up. He goes on to give an example. He gives an example of how following the tradition of the elders and of these Pharisees would actually defy following a commandment of God to honor your mother and father. And then he starts to talk about what really makes someone unclean in verses 14 to 23. So again, Jesus isn't saying here, no, 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 drop that whole idea of defilement, you know, like what does it mean to be defiled or unclean? That's an archaic religious concept that we just need to get past. He says, no, no, I'm with you. We need to be clean. There's something that does defile us, but it's way worse than you think it is. I mean, he's saying to the Pharisees, you think the problem is that your hands aren't clean enough? You think the problem is that people aren't washing properly? Let me show you where the real source of uncleanliness comes from. And Jesus goes so far as to say that nothing outside of you, okay? So not even just hands, but nothing external to you can make you unclean. In verses 14 to 23. He says, verse 15, there's nothing outside a person that by going into him can defile him. And the reason he gives is because the things that go into you, like food, for example, passes through your digestive system, okay? But it never touches your heart. And when the Bible talks about the heart, or when Jesus talks about the heart, he's not thinking primarily of an organ. He's thinking, the Bible uses that term metaphorically to refer to your inner being, the center of your thoughts, the center of your will, the center of your affections, the place that kind of makes you you, that you live life out of. In short, and this is even how we use heart today, the heart is what you love. The heart is what you live for. And Jesus is saying, the stuff that comes out of there, that's what defiles a person. That's what makes someone unclean. And he says, all these evil things that he lists in verses 21 and 22 come out of a person, and they make you unclean. Because those evil things reveal what you love. They reveal your heart. And the heart is the thing that God is after. The Pharisees may wash their hands, but their heart is far from God. He says, that's the thing that makes you unclean. That's the thing that defiles you. And just in case you wanted to look at this list of evil deeds that Jesus puts out there, this kind of laundry list of sins, and think that it's not talking about you, he always broadens it enough to catch all of us, right? So you look at it and you think, like, murder, you know, like, I've never murdered anyone. But you read more of Jesus' teaching and he correlates anger to murder, and then you're like, oh, gosh. But even here, he starts the list with evil thoughts. Evil thoughts? Come on, man. That's like every 5 minutes I have an evil thought. And so, what he's saying is those things give evidence of what you love. The actions in your life that defy God's commandments aren't the biggest problem. The biggest problem is what those reveal about your heart. They reveal a heart that is far from God. We need to be clean, and you need to be clean, because these actions evidence that our hearts love something other than God. That something other than him is the thing that we're living for when we have evil thoughts, sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, coveting, wickedness, deceit. So you've maybe heard the phrase, you are what you eat. Jesus says, no, that's not true. All foods are clean, you're not what you eat. Jesus says, you are what you love. What really defines you as a person is what you love, what you worship, what you give your heart to. And that's what's wrong with sin. That's why even small sins are taken very seriously in the Bible. You know, in this list, for example, he mentions evil thoughts or coveting. What's coveting? Coveting is desiring something that God has given to someone else but not given to you, and saying, God should have given that to me. How dare he not do that? Now you think, well, what's the big deal? Like, coveting, you're not even necessarily stealing anything. You're not hurting anyone. In fact, some people argue that coveting is good for humanity because it makes you want things, then you try harder. What's the problem, you know? The problem is what coveting reveals about our hearts. It reveals that my heart loves something more than it loves God. It loves this thing that God has made and gives my affection and my desires to it instead of him. It's a personal affront to him, even though the deed itself is comparatively small. It's like spitting, for example. It's a pretty minor offense, right? Like, people might think it's gross, but if you just spit on the ground outside of your house, not a big deal. But if you spit in someone's face, that takes on a very different connotation, right? We know immediately that's an offense. And what God is saying is that you're never just spitting on the ground. When you spit and when you sin against him, you're ultimately spitting in his face. You're saying, I love something more than you. I don't want you. I want to love this other thing. That's why sin is taken seriously in the Bible. That's the real reason we need to be clean. Washing your hands, when that's the problem? Jesus is totally reorienting us here. But look, that's a tough pill to swallow, right? It's tough to think, like, me? Like, that's what my sin is? Like, it's easy to think of the things we've done wrong and to look at the external causes of them, to say the reason this is present in my life is because of all these other things here. It's like if you're in a close relationship with someone, if you're married, for example. Like, we always hope it's a communication problem, right? Like, I'm sure the reason we're fighting right now isn't because of anything in my heart. It's just because we're not really talking to one another. And I just hope that's the problem here. And sometimes it is, okay? Sometimes you just have to learn how to speak each other's language so that you understand each other. But sometimes you just have to face the fact that in that moment, you loved yourself more than you loved your spouse. And that's a lot harder to admit to yourself and to your spouse. Like, honestly, I said what I meant. I meant what I said. And it just wasn't pretty. And what Jesus is saying here is that's the case with our hearts. When we have an evil thought, when things come out of us, they're coming from a heart that's far from him. Take, for example, I struggle with anger. This week, I get angry. I tend to have, and a lot of times it is evil thoughts. You know, like I'm social enough that I know, like, hey, don't blow up at people. You know, like they won't like that very much, okay? But in my head, I can do that, right? I can be playing out scenes in my head of like, oh, this is what it would look like if I really laid into this person, you know? And where is that coming from? I'd like to say it's coming from the things these people have done to me. And usually it happens when I have a plan for something. Like I like schedules, you know, I like to schedule my day. I have a plan for things we need to be doing as a church or things I want to be happening in my life. And then people come in and they have their own plan and it doesn't fit mine. And I just want to, come on, get in line. What's wrong with you? That's the thoughts that are going through my head. And I say, well, it's their problem. They're not valuing the right things. They're not loving the right things. If they were more like me, we could all get along. Jesus is revealing my heart here. He's saying, nah, I don't think it's their problem. I think this anger is coming from a heart issue. And it's a heart that loves your agenda more than it loves me. It's a problem in my relationship with him. I'm not just spitting on the ground. I'm spitting in his face. So where in your life are you failing to see this vertical dimension? That behind every sin, behind everything you do out here, is a relationship with God issue, a heart before him issue. Are there areas of your life where you've been kind of convincing yourself that, no, it's out there, it's just their problem, or it's just a personality thing, or it's just an upbringing thing, or it's just the way I'm wired? Where Jesus would come in and say, no, I think that's coming from a heart that's far from God right now. Where are you tending to blame your externals, to blame the people around you instead of seeing what's in here? We're contrasting two answers to the question of why you need to be clean. One answer says the problem is out there. It's unclean hands, it's the people in your life, it's the government, it's your school, it's your family, it's your experiences. It's all out there. And look, there's problems out there too, okay? Let's not deny that. But that's not what Jesus is dealing with here. He wants to deal with your heart. And he says, the biggest problem is still in you, inside. So let's look at what won't make you clean then. If the problem is in here, washing your hands won't make you clean. But that's always the religious answer, right? The religious answer is something external because, again, the problem is out there. The problem is you're not doing enough, you're not following the rules, we're not obeying your elders. So what do we need? We need more rules, tighter restrictions, tighter penalties. That kind of thing will fix people. And so we need washing laws and all that. But Jesus exposes it, right? He says in verses 6 and 7 that what's actually happening there is not people who have gotten more serious about their relationship with God. It's people who honor God with their lips. So they're doing something, right? It looks like they're worshiping God. And he says they worship him, right, in verse 7. But it's in vain that they worship him. It's a farce. It's they're worshiping him with actions, but it's hearts that are far from him. Now, what's interesting thing about this passage is he's quoting something from the book of Isaiah. He says, well did Isaiah prophesy of you hypocrites. And Isaiah is a book written earlier in the Bible. And what Isaiah was doing when he spoke those words is he was thinking of false teachers in his own time period. But now Jesus is taking it and saying, Isaiah was talking about you guys, you Pharisees. And part of why he can do that is because this is a characteristic of religion throughout the ages. In general, hearts that are far from God will often express that through religion. So he's basically saying where you find this religious mindset, beneath that, you're going to see a heart far from God. That's one of the ways that hearts far from him express themselves. One way hearts far from him express themselves is just by running away, right? But he's saying there's actually another way. You can be far from God and yet build up these rules for yourself. That's what religion tends to do. Because here's what religion will do for you. It'll let you keep your heart far from God and still convince yourself that you're a good person and God likes you. So you never actually have to come to him, but you can have your list of stuff that you're doing right and feel good about yourself. Think of it this way. Let's say you have a disease and you know you have this problem, but you hate your doctor. Your doctor is just, he's that guy who's like got the, you know, private jet and the really cool stories about how great his life is. And you're like, I just don't want to be around this guy. I don't like him. And so you want to stay away from your doctor, okay? I'm not saying all doctors are like that, but, you know, they exist. So med students are like getting mad at me. let's say you hate your doctor, okay? And so you don't want to be around him. There's a couple different ways you can avoid your doctor. One is you can just try to convince yourself you don't have a disease. You can just say, hey, look, I'm going to keep eating whatever I want, exercise. I'm not that into it. You know, who cares? And so I'm just going to keep living my life, forget the rules. I'm going to do my own thing. But there's actually, and most of us would look at that and say, hey, there's someone who doesn't care about being healthy, right? But there's another way you can do it. You can say, I'm just going to be so healthy that I never have to go see my doctor. I'm just going to convince myself that I'm healthy because I'm going to eat all the right foods. I'm always going to exercise. I'm going to get at least 8 hours of sleep. I'm going to get blackout curtains because I read a study. I heard those are better. I'm going to get a standing desk. I'm going to get next. And you're going to look at that person and say, this person really cares about health. They're passionate. But really, they just hate their doctor. They don't want to be around the guy. And Jesus is saying that's what religion is like. It's people who look like they're really excited about holiness, but really, they just don't want to be around God. They don't want him. And so now they've got rules that they can look at and assure themselves by. They can feel healthy, but never have to go see the doctor. They can convince themselves that everything is okay, but never have to bring their heart. And so what they inevitably do is they add to the law. They add new rules to make themselves feel better. And so if you find in your life that you feel like you have to do certain things that God never commanded, or you feel guilty for doing things that God never prohibited, that God never told you you couldn't do, you've probably at least been influenced by religion, or you yourself may be giving into it. If you find when you think about how to better your life, the thing you think of is, I need to add like a lot more rules to my life to rein all this in. You think that's my biggest problem. I'm not saying that doesn't have a place somewhere, but that can easily become a way to feel better without having to actually come to God, without having to actually give your heart to him. And what you'll usually do if that's how you're operating is you'll also read that onto other people. That's the step they always take here. See, they couldn't just be guys who said, you know what, I think it would really help my relationship with God if I washed my hands a little bit before I ate. They had to be people who said, no, you have to do it too. And how dare you not do it the way that I'm doing it? Because, if I think you have to do this stuff for God's acceptance, then other people not doing it is a real threat. I have to get mad at them. I have to look at them and say, how dare you? This is how divisions happen in churches a lot of times. It's one person has an idea. It may not even be a terrible idea. Sometimes it is. It may be, you know, okay, this is something that God's wanting you to do. But that person has taken that and made it the thing that makes them right before God. It's the thing they look at and say, I know I'm one of the good people because I do this. And therefore, everyone who's not, I'm threatened by your presence. I wish you weren't here. I wish you would stop what you're doing and get on board with what I'm doing. Racial tension can happen that way. If what makes me a good person and acceptable is the color of my skin, I look at everyone who has a different color and I say, you're a threat to me. I don't want to be around you. It can happen through personal choices that you make. Parents struggle with this a ton. I mean, moms get around each other, and it's like a judgment festival of like, this is the thing that I found for my kid that's going to make my life perfect, and now your kids better be on the same page, or you're going to feel like you're a total failure, even though God never actually said that stuff. So it may be a good decision for a mom to stay home and to not work. It may be a good decision for their family to homeschool their kids or to send them to a private school or to send them to a public school. It may be a good decision for a mom to go work. It may be a good decision for parents to do baby-wise or not to do baby-wise or to, you know, all those things may be good things. But if you find you're looking at other parents and you're judging them in your heart for not doing it, you've probably taken that thing and made it the thing that makes you right with God. And now you're looking at everyone else who's not doing it and with anger, with disdain, with a threat towards you. Religion will always lead you to add to God's law and then to judge others who aren't obeying by the law that you've made. So usually when we hear this, we think, okay, what needs to happen is we have to cast off these restraints. Get rid of the rules. Get rid of all this stuff. You know, we say things like, it's not about rules, it's about relationship, and, you know, there's something to that. But Jesus, interestingly here, what's his big problem with the Pharisees? Their hearts are far from God. And what does that mean for how they live? It means they disobey God's commandments. What's he charging them with? The example he gives is, your tradition is preventing people from obeying God's commands. He's saying God has a command to honor your mother and father. This is what he's talking about in verses 7 through 13. He's saying God has said these things, and by your religion, people are becoming less obedient to God's actual law. Your religion is fighting against what God is after. So he's not saying let's dump all of God's commands. He's saying, let's actually do the things God commanded and not the things that you guys are adding to it for the sake of your religion. But he's saying the best way to get there, the best way to get obedience to God's commands isn't religion. Religion is actually fighting it. Religion is preventing people from obeying God's commands. See, sometimes we think, you know how we need to get more obedience is to add more rules. Jesus is saying that can actually get in the way of true obedience to the things that God has commanded. Not to mention, if you try that, if you try to just cast off all rules and all authority in your life, if you say that's the key to fighting religion, it's unlivable. You will live by somebody's rules. So if you say it's not going to be religion, you're still going to look for something to make you feel clean, something to reassure yourself, and all that stuff has rules too. So you're going to say, okay, I'm not going to do it the religious way, but here's what's going to make me clean. I'm going to get somebody to love me. There's a song lyric, you better make somebody love you before it's too late. You know, like, and that becomes the thing you live for. Well, now there's rules that you have to follow. You have to figure out what that person likes. You have to tell the jokes that they like. You have to dress the way that they want you to. You have to say the things that they want you to. You have to be really loving, but not too loving because that gets creepy. And, you know, like, you have to figure out this little window that you have to fit into, a precise law that can be unforgiving. You know, and you feel like if you mess up, that thing that I'm living for might be gone. I have to be successful. I have to study. I have to make sure I get the best grades, and I have to get the job, and I have to get the promotion. Your heart will go after something to reassure yourself that you're clean. You can't live with no law over you. You will always enslave yourself to something. But these things don't work because none of them touch your heart. None of them deal with the problem. If the reason that we need to be clean is hearts that are far from God, religion or a job or a spouse, or anything else, won't fix it. You need something that actually gets into your heart. So let's look at the real cleanliness. Let's look at how Jesus fights religion when he sees it. We've already seen it's not by doing away with God's commandments. It's not that Jesus sees the bar the Pharisees have set and says, guys, we need to lower that bar down. Let's be a little nicer here. It's actually, he says, you've set the bar a little too low. The bar is so high that it goes into our hearts, that it goes to what we love. He actually increases the demand that God makes on us so much that none of us can possibly look at ourselves and say, oh, I can do that. I mean, you read verses 21 to 23, you know, evil thoughts, covetousness. Oh, yeah, I can do that. Really? So he starts talking about these food laws, right? He starts talking about what makes a person truly clean. There's an interesting thing here, and some of you may have noticed it earlier. Jesus is basically saying that something God said before no longer applies. Because when he starts talking about all foods being clean, that nothing outside a person that goes into him can defile him, it seems like he's arguing against an earlier part of the Bible. Like I talked about Leviticus 11 earlier, this passage I was reading in my personal time with God, where God specifically says, you can eat these animals, they're clean, and these animals you can't eat, they're unclean. And then Jesus comes along and says, nothing outside of you can make you unclean because it doesn't touch your heart. It doesn't get to the inside of you. So is Jesus doing the very thing he said the Pharisees were doing? Is he defying a commandment of God here? Well, in a sense, he is. But what he's doing in a very particular way. He's saying there's nothing in food that's inherently bad because nothing outside of you can make you unclean. It doesn't touch your heart. So that when God declared certain foods clean or unclean, it wasn't because there was something uniquely bad about this group of foods. It was that God has the authority as God to declare things clean or unclean. And so he just chooses to do it. But it means that that may not be permanent. It may be something that can change. But only God has the authority to determine when that happens. So an Israelite couldn't have come along a few years after God gave the law and said, like, hey, look, none of this stuff's touching our hearts, you know? Let's just eat the foods God said we couldn't eat. No, they don't have that authority. It's like sometimes parents prohibit their kids from doing certain things that aren't inherently bad. Like, my parents didn't let me drink coffee until I was 16 or 17. They drank coffee every day. So it's not that they thought coffee was bad. They just had reasons that I didn't understand for prohibiting me from drinking that. And so God is saying here, Jesus is saying, foods aren't inherently bad, but God had a reason for declaring certain foods clean and other foods unclean. But then here comes Jesus, and he claims that same authority. You see that Mark tells us in verse 19 that Jesus declared all foods clean. Jesus can do what the Pharisees in practice did by their traditions. He can abrogate parts of the law because he has an authority the Pharisees don't have. He's God come in the flesh. And just like you as the parents are the ones who have the authority to say, okay, you're old enough, you can drink coffee now. Jesus has the authority to say, okay, these laws are no longer binding. Now, why would he do that? What makes these laws temporary? Well, the laws were there to teach us something. These complex food laws taught us that you need to be clean. But what Jesus is saying is the reality they pointed to was something much deeper than your hands being clean. It was pointing to your heart being clean. And now that he has come, he is the one who fulfills that law. He's saying these laws were there to introduce you to the kind of cleanliness that I am going to live out in my life. Jesus is the one with the perfectly clean heart, the one whose heart is not far from God, the one who lives the clean life that the law pointed to, the one who had no evil thoughts, no sexual immorality, no theft, no murder, no adultery, no coveting, no wickedness, no deceit, no sensuality, no envy, no slander, no pride, no foolishness. He's the heart that drew near to God. And yet when he was on the cross, he was treated as one who was unclean. He was cast out of God's presence such that he cries out, my God, why have you forsaken me? Though he drew near to God, his heart was far from God in that moment. So that you and I, people whose hearts have been far from God, people who have run from him, whose hearts have loved other things, could be brought near. So that our hearts could be brought back to God, the one that we've been running from. And he's saying once that happens, once you experience that kind of cleanliness, the food laws don't apply anymore. Because that's the thing they were pointing to. They were a shadow of this, but you've got the reality. You've got the real deal. And in the same way Jesus has the authority to declare certain foods clean, only God has the authority to declare you clean. And only through Jesus can those of us with unclean hearts be declared clean. That you can actually hear God say, you are clean because you have been united to Jesus, the one who was clean. And when Jesus is resurrected from the dead, that's what God is saying to him. God is saying, you are clean. You are my son. You have obeyed. And if you identify with Jesus, if you come to him through faith, God declares you clean. So what does this mean? It means the path to real change, the path to heart change, real cleanliness comes as we come to the one who was clean, as we come to the one who died in our place, as we come to the one who's been declared clean. And then when you are declared clean, you don't need a bunch of rules to assure yourself anymore because you have the real thing. You've been made clean already, so you don't need religion. Your heart has been brought near. You don't have to cover up a heart that's far from God with religious observance. But when God declares you clean, he doesn't make you clean right away. There's still areas of your life that are going to be progressive that he's going to grow you in over a lifespan. But the way you do that, the way you try to cleanse the remaining evil inside of you is very different. If you don't know whether you've been declared clean versus whether you do know. If you think, I have to make myself clean by my observance, you're going to fight very different from someone who knows I've been declared clean. I'm already clean in God's sight through Jesus. And now we just got to mop up this other mess that's still here. I have a comparison that's going to be up here on the screen behind me of some characteristics of what it might look like If you fight sin, if you try to grow in such a way that you don't know if you've been declared clean, you end up with religion. You end up very defensive when accused because I have to think of myself as a good person, so it couldn't possibly be that I'm wrong about anything. If you must admit to wrong, you never admit to it on a heart level. You never say, yeah, that's because I wasn't loving Jesus in this moment. It's more of it was external circumstances. You fight with increased discipline and changed behavior. You say, I just need to read my Bible more. I just need to set a better schedule for myself and improve my discipline, and then I'll do it. You'll try to change your behavior. You'll try, and when you fail, you'll inevitably feel terrible about yourself because you're the one fighting it. It's all about you. And you don't know if you've been declared clean. You feel like you just lost your identity. Think about the way I fight anger. You know, I mentioned that was a struggle for me. If I don't know whether I've been declared clean, then when someone comes to me and says you are angry in that moment, I'm going to be defensive. I say, well, frustrated maybe, okay? I'm angry. No, I don't think so because I can't admit it. That would scare me to admit that that's actually something in my heart because I don't know if I've been declared clean. I have to convince myself I'm a good person. It would be a lot of I'll try to take a deep breath and count to 10 next time I get angry. I'll try to think about something else. And again, not to say that couldn't help you at some point, but that stuff leaves your heart untouched. For someone who knows they've been declared clean, they can believe the gospel, the good news. They can welcome correction in their life because I don't have to think of myself as a good person. I know that God declares me clean even when I'm not. I can admit to my heart's false love beneath my behaviors. I fight, instead of fighting with increased discipline, the thing I work on is an increased trust in Jesus, the one who was clean in my place. And I fight by trying to change my love from this other thing I've been loving to loving Jesus. And therefore, when I fail, I focus on how amazing it is that God forgives sinners, that God declares me clean even when I'm not. I fight by saying, why is my heart loving this other thing that's not as good as Jesus? How can I get back to believing what he's already done for me and loving him and letting him change me from the inside, from my heart, out to my behaviors? So you do need to be made clean, but you need to be made clean on the heart, not in the externals, not in the washing of hands. And religion will never do it. It'll just cover it up, make you feel better about yourself while leaving your heart totally untouched. What you need is to be declared clean by the one who is truly clean. You need to know that he has made you clean by his perfect life. Then you're free to expose the other things your heart is loving. You're free to focus on the place that the uncleanliness is coming from and to turn to a new love, the only thing truly worth your love, the one who died in your place.